The plot thickens in the allegations against Biden, Inc., as we learn that Hunter Biden's former business partner has turned over his documents to the Senate. New today, the former business partner of Hunter Biden, Tony Bobulinski, is now on record. He's on record saying that Joe Biden was aware of his son's business dealings. Hello, everyone. I'm Trish Regan. This is The Trish Regan Show. Tony Bobulinski is saying that the Biden family aggressively leveraged its family name in order to secure foreign business deals. According to some of the documentation released by Bobulinski to the Senate and uncovered by Chuck Cross over at the Daily Caller News Foundation, it seems that Hunter Biden and his business partners made an investment pitch to a Chinese energy company back in 2017 and touted, allegedly, Joe Biden's relationship with the Colombian president. Okay, so the question now is, how do we know the extent of Joe Biden's involvement? I mean, what exactly was the extent of his involvement? Why isn't he telling us? He did say that he and his son never discussed business. That was about a year ago to Fox. And then in a debate recently, he said that he had never taken any money from a foreign entity. But here's the thing. Maybe he didn't. But the question is, did his family? People want and need to know the answer to this question. Did Joe Biden use his son to gain money from foreign entities? I mean, look, it's a fair question. And that really has not been answered. I mean, sure, Joe Biden tells us it's all just a smear campaign. Don't believe it. It's a smear campaign. The left wants us to believe that this is nothing but Russian disinformation. And big media, they won't report on it, of course. You know, nothing to hurt their candidate. And big tech is literally, quite literally, shutting the story down. By the way, share the podcast while you can, right? Because there's all these algorithms out there that are going to prevent this information from getting out. You're not even allowed to ask these questions right now, which to me is frankly becoming a much bigger story here. The New York Post, because it dared to report on this in the first place, is still stuck with its Twitter account being locked. Less than a week before a presidential election. The newspaper founded by Alexander Hamilton. I'm sure he wouldn't like that very much. Perhaps big tech doesn't want Donald Trump to win because, well, I don't know, maybe he might actually be a force with big tech that they'd have to reckon with, right? Because they might actually have to honor our First Amendment. I'm asking this question because it is still, frankly, my constitutional right to ask this very question, just as it is my constitutional right and yours to ask, did Joe Biden funnel money through his son? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I have all this alleged evidence out there, but I'd like him to clear it up. I mean, there's two people that could clear it up, frankly, right now. Just tell us the laptop's fake, the emails are fake, or they've been doctored. The two people are Hunter and Joe Biden. Joe Biden won't address this head on. It's a bunch of, you know, non-denial denials. And we don't know where Hunter Biden is lately. But let's back up for a second here, because, you know, I want to be very clear. A family member of a politician should be able to conduct his or her business independently from their family member without having to worry, you know, about what business his or her parents are in or family members are in. I mean, there should be the ability, right, to have your own career. It's not like just because you have a father or, you know, a brother that's in politics that you're suddenly shut out. Consider the Trump kids, right? A lot of analogies are being drawn right now between Hunter Biden and the Trump kids by the leftist media. But those analogies, I'll tell you, they don't quite fit. They don't quite fit because, you know what? There was a business in the family, a business that those kids took part in and were part of, and that their father ran for many, 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 many years before ever getting into the field of politics, before ever running for office. The business itself cannot shut its doors, right? Because he ran for office and he became president. And so the eldest son, Eric Trump, took over the business. The father exited. Now, you know, there's all these charges about, well, you know, maybe there's still some foreign entities that are trying to carry favor. And I don't dispute, I actually don't dispute how challenging it must be to navigate this path. However, and this is important. However, it's not as though those kids, the Trump kids, were out there making careers because of their father's influence in politics. In other words, in the case of the Trump family, the cart didn't come before the horse. The business was a standalone entity all on its own. And that actually is significant. I mean, that differentiating factor is rather important because with Hunter, you get a different story here, right? I mean, he had a rather checkered, unfortunate past, but somehow wound up in all kinds of deals. And I mean all kinds of deals. I read the entire 64-page report on his dealings in China, in part alleged, in part actually documented. It was published by a guy named Christopher Balding, who's a former business professor at the Peking University HSBC Business School, who actually left China in 2018 because he feared for his personal safety. And he's been a critic of China. He's been a frequent guest on Bloomberg. He's written pieces for Bloomberg and also Foreign Policy magazine. Pretty sharp critic of the Chinese government. Anyway, he published this thing, this 64-page report on his blog because he said he'd reviewed it and he believed it to be true. So here's the deal. I read it all, every single page. That's what I do. And I'll tell you, it's dense. It's really, really dense. This is not written as a piece of opposition research per se, because it's, well, frankly, too dense to be opposition research. Nonetheless, there are some opinions that are laced in throughout a series of publicly cited documents and reports. Anyway, my takeaway from the whole thing is, wow, I mean, Hunter Biden did a lot of deals. I mean, or he tried to do a lot of deals. I mean, this guy's productivity rate, is just like off the charts. I mean, if you believe what's written here in terms of deal flow that's being alleged in this document, it's a lot of work he was up to. I mean, I do have, frankly, a little difficulty reconciling his personal challenges that we've all read about with the ambition on the deal flow that seems to be evident in this 64-page thing. But, you know, maybe I'm just naive here. the guy apparently had a lot going on. Anyway, the question now is what part, you know, leave that aside for a moment because he can have a lot going on, right? That's not the problem. It's what part did his father play in any of this? In one of the alleged texts that was uncovered in the so-called laptop from HELL, Hunter Biden is allegedly complaining to his daughter that he has to pay 50% of all the cash he collects to Pop. And on top of that, one of the emails refers to 10% being held by H for the big guy. And we're now told by the former business partner of Hunter's that H stood for Hunter and the big guy was none other than Joe Biden. And because I'm not done here, you know I'm not done. I'm never quite done. John Radcliffe, the director of U.S. intelligence, says the laptop is real. The emails are real. So Joe Biden needs to address this. He needs to address this controversy head on. We are less than a week away from a presidential election. And I will tell you this, you know, and I know, America should never be for sale. Okay, coming up, everyone, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar aggressively campaign to pack the court, while AOC adds that COVID wouldn't have been so bad if we'd just had a Green New Deal. Plus, why Wall Street predicts a massive, massive spike if Donald Trump wins. Well, 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 the squad is at it again. The appointment of Amy Coney Barrett just seems to be driving them a little bit insane. They're like becoming a little unhinged, and now they're openly out there confirming what most of us would consider like certifiably insane. They want to pack the court. I mean, it was quite literally the tweet from Ilhan Omar that was then retweeted by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They want to pack the court. They want to destroy the foundation of what has made us great, which is the separation of powers. Thank you very much. And it's worked for, what, 200 plus years? It's worked pretty well. We are the most successful nation on earth. We are the most prosperous economy on earth. We are still the hegemonic power here on earth. And what, we want to throw all that away? Because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar didn't get their way, these two freshman congresswomen? And by the way, they are now the voice of the Democrat Party. I mean, Joe Biden's up there with Kamala Harris. And, you know, the party wants to present him as somehow, you know, a different version of the extremism that exists today. But we see the extremism out there and we know how beholden he is to it because he needs the base, right, in order to get elected. What a mess. What a mess this is. And just to further compound it all in terms of what a mess it is, AOC is out there and she went on Jane Fonda's podcast. And by the way, I'm sorry, Jane Fonda has a podcast. That's kind of interesting. By the way, I like loved her in Monster-in-Law, you know, where she plays the really tough mother-in-law with Jennifer Lopez. I really liked her in that movie. But it is a little funny that she has a podcast. Anyway, good for her. I love these actors that are just so fascinated by politics. Anyway, AOC in her high-pitched, very high-pitched, nasal-sounding little voice with a Comrade Brown quasi-military style like jacket on, you know, beige background, completely beige background against this wall, you know, really looking the part, frankly, told us that COVID wouldn't have been so bad if we had just gotten that Green New Deal back in January. Yeah, this is the insanity of the left right now. Quote, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says, if we had passed a Green New Deal by January this year, that would mean that we had a political establishment that respects science, that is willing to mobilize and make major investments to protect the American people and, frankly, our global population. And then she goes on and on and on and on and on. And on. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, somehow the Green New Deal is the answer to everything. These people, I'll tell you, AOC, Ilhan Omar, they frankly, in my opinion, a danger to America right now. And I'll tell you one thing, corporate America, they think that they can somehow placate them, right? By giving them a little bit of money and a little bit of lip service, but good luck. Good luck. You know, I would say the corruption is still off the charts. Ilhan Omar, in the month of September, her campaign actually gave 64% of its entire budget to none other than the new hubby. I mean, listen, you know, these socialists, these communists, they all talk a good game. But when it comes down to the bottom line, let's just say she's a little interested, a little too interested in keeping it all in the family, so to speak. And remember, Joe Biden isn't really their guy, right? That's not really who they would have wanted. They wanted Bernie Sanders, frankly, because they wanted to change, radically change who we are. And here's the deal. They're not going to stop. I mean, even if Joe Biden wins and Kamala Harris, they're not going to stop. I don't think they will stop until they have ruined our country, all in an effort to restart some kind of utopian vision that is flat out dangerous. We can't allow it. I mean, here we are, less than a week left, and Americans, every single one of us needs to do our part and our duty to protect what is right, right now. Coming up next, one more reason to vote red. The market will go way up if Donald Trump wins again. Investors are watching these polls so carefully. They're all trying to anticipate who might win the election. I will maintain this. Donald Trump has a very good shot. I think he's going to pull the whole thing off. Anyway, you got these market enthusiasts that are out there touting Biden, trying to sort of get their head around, well, a Biden win won't be that bad. I mean, could have been worse. Could have been Bernie Sanders, right? Anyway, they're trying to say, oh, it won't be that bad. It's actually really bullish for markets. But you know what? The chief equity analyst at JP Morgan, smart guy, Dubravko Lakas Buhas, he disagrees. According to him and his research team, another orderly win by President Trump would actually be the most positive thing for stocks. I agree with him. I mean, I actually don't think it's that hard. You know, you put less regulation and lower taxes together, and what do you get? A more positive environment for the overall economy and hopefully some more fundamental, real growth. Anyway, after analyzing Twitter sentiment, this is one of the things he looked at, and comparing and contrasting it with the traditional polling data, the JP Morgan team, they're finding evidence that, you know what, this race is a whole lot tighter than the mainstream media wants you to think. And so the chief equity analyst there at JP Morgan, he's so convinced that the administration's economic policies would be viewed positively by Wall Street, right, that he's actually putting a 3,900 level target on the S&P by year end should the president gain a second term, which would mean basically better than a 12%. That's a double digit increase in the market between now and December 31st if Donald Trump wins. So that could be a really big bet that really pays off. Listen, I agree wholeheartedly with the positive outcome for stocks under the assumption that this is an orderly Trump win. And already there's evidence that our economy is on the mend. We're looking at stronger retail sales numbers. We're looking at improving consumer and business confidence numbers, lower unemployment levels, right? And the expectation that our economy could have grown is as much as 33% in the latest quarter. We're actually going to get the official data tomorrow from the government. So watch for that GDP data for the third quarter. I spoke with Adam Johnson, who's a stock picker, market researcher over at Bullseye Brief, bullseyebrief.com. And he's up like 40% this year. So he's doing really well. And he said occasionally he was a little sick to his stomach during those, you know, scary days in March, but his bets thus far have really paid off. And he said he believes the markets will react positively to a Trump win. So he's in agreement with myself, me, and JP Morgan on that. Adam Johnson, he actually put a year-end target of 3,600 on the S&P if Donald Trump wins next week, in part because of the psychological boost that the market would receive. And let me quote what he said to me. He said, "Trish, you know, it's real simple. It's a 20 multiple PE on earnings of $180, which is what we would have made if COVID-19 had never happened. And considering that the GDP was down, what, 31% in the second quarter, but is expected to be up 33% this quarter," he said, "our economy will effectively have returned to a level of normalcy." Right. And don't forget, he's expecting this really big uptick in the market, in part because nobody else does. I mean, that's how you actually make money, right? When you're going against the trend. And we saw that last time around in 2016, right? The market was positioned for something else entirely. They may be again. Meanwhile, Adam Johnson, he's also gaming out these additional scenarios. And let's just say he's pretty bullish. Of course, his publication is called Bullseye Brief. But he said if Biden wins the Oval Office and the Senate stays Republican, then he sees stocks eventually moving higher. He said the markets will like the gridlock. Biden's a stimulus guy, but the Republicans will hold him back. And, you know, he said it won't be as fast a rally as if Trump were to win, but eventually we'll see things move up. Meanwhile, I asked him, what about if it's a blue wave, right? Because that's my real concern in terms of our economic policy. And he's still pretty optimistically looking at this. He did say we'd probably trade down 5-6% initially, but over the long run, you might actually see the market respond okay because of more stimulus, more handouts for healthcare, more infrastructure building. I mean, look, I don't like any of that because to me, I want real fundamental growth. And one of the things I've looked at over the last 4 years is that we have had real fundamental growth. And I think that's super important. You just can't keep printing money and expect that that's going to lead you to prosperity. Anyway, he's pretty bullish no matter the scenario, but the most bullish he is on the market is if, in fact, Donald Trump wins, because Trump would be the best for U.S. markets. Anyway, spread the truth, please, everyone. I'm not going to stay quiet. I'm not going to stay silent. I'm here. I'm here for every single one of you, and I am here to help preserve the greatest nation on earth. I'll talk to you tomorrow.